Hi, I am Ross, a very grateful recovering compulsive overeater, and I have spoke at this meeting before, but I was asked kind of as a fill-in, and it was my pleasure to do it. Let's see, what I like to do is, what I normally do is I kind of, I'll tell you a little where I was when I came in and what's happening now. And hopefully there'll be some experience, strength in hope and hope in that. And through the and I am a member of the No Matter What Club. I heard someone say that. Of course it's abstinence no matter what. I always love saying this. I used to say abstinence is the most important thing in my life, without exception. But I felt compelled to let you know that I know that this is a my disease attacks me on three, in three parts, and that's physical, spiritual, and emotional. So my recovery has to include spiritual, physical and emotional. And I kind of would like kind of fumble my words because I did not want you to think the only aspect of my recovery is a physical one. But then several years ago in reading, and I think it was the latest edition of the Overeaters Anonymous Brown Book, excellent stories in there. And the author said it in a little different way. He said, God-given abstinence is the most important thing in my life without exception. And that brought it to a new level for me because God did not give me a diet. He gave me a way of life based on the 12 steps and 12 traditions. And I'm ever grateful for that because how else can I say that in September of last year, I celebrated 45 years of back-to-back abstinence. And actually, my abstinence date and my first meeting are one day apart. It took me a day to start to break the hold of the diet mentality, which I had, because when I was on diets, I would always, and I hadn't said this in a while, but I called it the Last Supper, because what I would do is, I would binge that night. I would thinking I'd get it out of my system, and also I would eat so much that my hope is that I put a couple, 2 or 3 pounds on. So the first week, because I was probably weighing myself every week, if not every day, would show a weight loss. So it would give me a little more than really, and so that's exactly what I did. I was impressed at my first meeting. Well, I was impressed. I was frightened. I wasn't sure if this was a religious program. But I think it was the first time I heard the words compulsive overeater. And I knew in the last 2 years that my eating took a dip, it was on a different level. It was really beginning to disgust me. And I knew I remember even thinking, it's just not normal when it comes to food. So I heard that word and I said, that's me. And this was, 1980. We had some 2 hour meetings. This one averaged about 50 people a week. Wasn't even the biggest one in our intergroup. There was one close to 100 a week. So I missed those meetings, but I'm happy that there's an option. There's an online option now. And so there was another word I heard, and that was a word that I didn't want to say out loud. I didn't want to believe it. And it took me a few meetings before I even could like say it. and that was disease. And then I learned all about this disease of compulsive overeating. It's incurable. Oh, great. Okay. It's a disease that tells you you don't have a disease. It could only be put in remission. And it's something you have to do one day at a time, every day. Oh, my goodness. But the longer I kept coming to meetings, and I was fortunate enough to get a sponsor at my first meeting, and it was and at that time, the suggestive food plans in just came out, and the pamphlet was called Dignity of Choice, and I picked one called the Basic Four, and I think it's still offered in Where Do You Start? It's called the Basic Plan, and I really basically. I've basically been on that plan for over 45 years, and also I am maintaining approximately an 80-pound weight loss. I don't know the exact date on that, but I say the next year in January. So in the beginning of the year it was 45 years, and if you kind of figure out the amount of weight I lost in that fairly short period. Well, one of the things, sometimes you might hear, what's your abstinence? Well, to me, it's only one abstinence, one definition of abstinence. Refraining from compulsive eating and compulsive food behaviors while working towards and maintaining a healthy body. Then we go on to say about the recovery. Spiritual, emotional, personal recovery is the result of living and working the 12-step Overeaters Anonymous program. And this was just added a few years ago on a daily basis. And so I, and one of the parts of the abstinence definition is, and this is why I say there's one definition of abstinence, but here's where we differ. And it is, the addictive foods and compulsive food behaviors. Some of us have different addictive foods, some of us have different compulsive food behaviors. And so hopefully and I call it a personal definition. This is what I call personal definition of abstinence, only because it addresses your, I'm addicted to sugar and white bread flour, and so that certainly is in there. And what was important to identify was I am a volume meter, a recovering volume meter. But so in other words, I had no definition of meals because I basically ate all the time. I was eating huge amount of foods, when I walked into the rooms. And not only that, I was becoming a physical mess. There were things happening in my body that certainly wasn't making me happy. I had trouble, even walking, my feet hurt me all the time. And I just couldn't stop eating. So like I said, I was able to, get a sponsor, and I began to, work and live the 12 steps to the best of my ability. Prior to that, just to go on my, into the food and also, when I was eating compulsively, my weight went, I think the best I ever did under dieting was about 25 pounds over what I am now, but it went from 25 pounds overweight, and I wasn't at my high, but I was nearing it when I walked in, because it went from like 25 pounds to 95 pounds over this weight. And not only you would, if it was a few months, you would not know what I looked like. I wouldn't even know what I would look like because the weight seemed fluctuating all the time, which is not healthy. And so I was able in the beginning of the dieting, I call it dieting career, to like diet, you know, 1 or 2 or 3 months. And then as the years went by, because it was 14 years, the amount of times that I could diet without, you know, without breaking it, without cheating, without going back to the eating, you know, became less and less. And the last, and what happened in the last 2 years, I was divorced at a young age, two small kids. I lived with somebody, and he was a roommate, and I have drank compulsively, and it's funny, he did too. And during that year, my drinking enhanced, but always the drug of choice, there was no debate, was the food. And what happened is, there was some friction, and I made the move to go closer to work and get my own apartment. The disease went wild. I mean, because I didn't have to hide. I didn't have to like have a argument with my then wife and you know, go so I could eat. I didn't have to sneak food. I didn't, but the eating behaviors became just kind of like really disturbing to me. And you know, I mean, typical. And you know, it's funny, it's not funny, but you know, I of course I know a lot of us have done this, but you know, I was so disgusted, felt horrible, I felt bloated, and I was eating something and I threw it in the garbage. I fell asleep, and when I, you know, of course woke up, I didn't feel so bloated, and that food call and that box of stuff called me. And I'm like, I'm taking it out of the garbage and I'm eating it. And it's, you know, self-knowledge avails us nothing because I told myself how sick I was. But so what? I didn't do anything about it. What happened, how I really found OA, well, kind of OA found me. I, you know, I worked, you know, in a, well, it was, you know, it was in a warehouse that had finished product food. So that is a recipe for disaster for a compulsive overeater. And I was an inspector. And I was able to keep that job abstinently, by the way, and learned I didn't have to eat everything. And, you know, I certainly geared it to my abstinent definition. But, you know, and my everybody saw me. And, you know, it was a funny thing. It was a refrigerated warehouse. And so, we could take our very heavy long coats with big pockets home to be washed. I wore it every day because I was so ashamed of my body. It could be 90 degrees and I wore that thing. I must have thought I had the cleanest coat in the company. And many failed diets, and somebody came to me and worked. And they said something that like crushed me. They said, "I see the way you eat." I go, "What?" I mean, I was going to great, you know, it was a very big warehouse with different places you could eat and different vending machines. And when I felt too many people were looking at me, those big pockets, I would eat in the stalls of the bathroom. So I was humiliated. And he said, "There's something called Overeaters Anonymous, maybe to help you." And this guy didn't have a great reputation. And I was probably a little afraid of him. And so I didn't tell him my true feelings, like what I thought of him coming up to me. But I said, "Well, you know, I'm on a diet now and it's working and blah, blah, blah." Well, everything crashed. And, I went to the phone book, and I looked up Overeaters Anonymous, and I got a person answered and told me about a meeting in St. Cecilia's in Islip, New Jersey. And I walked in, and my life changed from that moment on. And you know, and I'll never forget Mike, because, I went up to him and I heard he drank a lot. And he had a motorcycle. He had a big beer. I went up to him after, oh no, I went up to him the day before my first meeting. I said, "Mike, I'm going to try Ovaries Anonymous." And I said, "How do you even know about it?" And you all probably know what I'm going to say. And you know what I'm going to say is, he said, "Ross, I'm in AA, and you know I know of Ovaries Anonymous." And
5 minutes, Ross.
thank you, Les. And that really moved me. And I see it was on a, I think it was on a 30-minute talk pace, but I think I could kind of, you know what I'll do? I'll go into, I will, oh, I'll tell you. So anyway, you get convinced that all the ills in the world is because, you eat compulsively and you're obese, or you and also you eat compulsively and you do something else to hide your symptoms, but it's all revolved. And if you ate normally, your life would change. And it really didn't all at once. It took really to working and living the 12 steps to the best of my ability. And I'll talk on the steps a little bit. So the steps are perfect. They're perfectly written. I love them. I'm so appreciative of the people who came up with it, persons. But I am imperfect and I can't do it. I can't work them and live them and do it. I can't do it perfectly. Except for one. And that's the first step. We admitted we were powerless over food, that our lives have became unmanageable. And I have to take that with a whole heart. I cannot have any wiggle room in it. If I don't take that commitment 100%, then I'm doing one thing that will sadly destroy me, and that's I'm giving the power back to the food. I cannot afford that for a second. So then I came upon, I didn't have a problem with that. I knew I was powerless. I maybe not didn't verbalize it. But I certainly was convinced in the last couple of years that I am really powerless of the first compulsive bite. And then there was other stuff you had to believe. And that's why I love the hope you get in step two. And you also get something that is I've used many, many times. And that's that little wiggle room you came to believe. You don't have to say, okay, yeah. No, you come to believe as you progress in working and living your steps, you will believe. And that did give me hope. And then the most monumental decision was in the third step, where I, turned my life and my will over the care of God as I understood him. And what happened with that is my life really changed. And and it's funny. What happened was last week, I didn't have a good week, and as many people know, we are in a pro. We were selling our house, and now we have sold it, and now we think we have another house. It's very, very stressful. I was, not certainly acting in a way that I wanted to. I was letting the fears and projections of the worst just take over. And when Mikey asked me, because I didn't even share until like the last 3 minutes. And I said, I guess I'll claim my seat. And But I did, and things have gotten better. And I don't know, what the future will be, but I trust in my higher power. And I think that I will say this, that staying on the theme of the steps, and I love telling this story, and probably I've told this story at this meeting before, but I'm going to tell it again because I love it. That I was at an outreach commitment at a medical school, and it was a symposium on obesity to first and second year medical students. We went several years, and we shared it with somebody who treated obesity and somebody from the bariatric community, and it was us. Well, one year the other two factors had to leave, and we were invited. There was a couple main speakers and then three or four of us. So we went up and the students asked a question. And one of the students asked to me, I was so surprised. And it was to everybody, what is the hardest step for you to work? And everybody answered it a little differently. And when it came to my turn, I said, well, it's not even a full step. It's the third part of the 12th step. To practice these principles in all my affairs. Boy, that is a challenge. I don't always do it, and I feel it when I don't. But, no matter what, I keep coming back.
Time.
Oh, okay. I keep coming back. You know why? Where else would I go? And with that, I am so happy to say to you, I enjoyed this, and thank you for allowing me to share.